So today's gospel ends, and Mary kept all these things in her heart. I often wonder about Jesus' life seen through the perspective of Mary's life, right? That's kind of the rosary, Rosary Sunday, right? When you think about it, Jesus' life starts with the Annunciation, the angel Gabriel to Mary, and Mary conceiving through the Holy Spirit. I often wonder when Mary comes home that day and her mother, Anne, says, "Honey, how was your day?" Like, how do you answer that question? I can only imagine throughout Jesus' life, there were many times where Mary had to just wonder, what is going on? Between the infancy narratives and then when the public ministry of Jesus starts, when he's about 30, we don't have much about Jesus' life. We have today's encounter when Jesus is about 12 and is found in the temple. So when we look at it, we then see when Jesus' ministry starts, Mary kind of fades into the background a little bit there. But I think she plays a beautiful supporting role. If you haven't seen the movie The Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson, I think Mel Gibson really captures Mary's supporting role of her son. A lot of times when you read just the text, you might not see Mary's name. You might not see the commentary on Mary's actions. But I think Mel Gibson captured that beautifully in his movie. There's one scene in particular when Jesus has been scourged, and he's now in prison. They're holding him overnight till the next day. And he's in a dungeon, and his hands are shackled, and he's being held up by a chain to the ceiling of the room that he's in. And that room is underneath, looks like almost like a town square. And the camera goes from Jesus and pans up, and you see Mary in the square, a mother searching for her child. And you see her kind of feeling the presence of her son. And she's walking, and she finally gets over the spot where Jesus is. And she looks down, and she gets down on all fours, and she puts her hands on the slabs of stone that are there. And Jesus, then the camera pans down again, then you can see both of them. And Jesus is reaching up to have that wonderful contact with his mother. It's just a beautiful scene showing how our Blessed Mother played such a beautiful role in salvation history, encouraging and supporting her son as he's entering into this most horrific act. Then there's after Christ's death. If you've never been to the Basilica, St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, put it on your bucket list. And when you do that, when you walk through the doors that are the size of this church, you walk through the doors and you go off to the right, Michelangelo's Pieta is there. And that too really captures Mary's role in salvation, shows just what she gave for our salvation. And you see her sitting, and her son, bloodied, broken, and dead, is draped across her lap. And when you stand there and look at it, you just feel a mother's heart breaking for her son. You can see this incredible sacrifice that she made. Mary saw lots of things in her life that must have made her wonder, God, what, why, how? Help me to understand, especially holding her dead son. But she wouldn't have to wait too long after Christ's death, because the resurrection, Easter Sunday, was 2 days away. Then she would see her son rise from the dead and eventually ascend up into heaven. So Mary's faith, Mary's fiat, let it be done to me according to thy word, and then living that out every single day allowed her to receive that fullness of God's revelation. And this is why she says in Luke's gospel, all generations will call me blessed, because God asked her to fulfill his will, and she obediently said yes. If you're over the age of, I don't know, 15, you could probably start looking back on your life and see where there were times where you're like, I don't really get this one, God. I don't understand what you're trying to tell me. But as we get older, we start connecting the dots. We start putting these things together and say, ah, now I get it. Now I understand why my high school sweetheart, Laura, dumped me. She's much better off. Now I start to see where some of the things that I did that were wrong, God was able to redeem. So we see throughout our faith that it's constantly unfolding. Constantly more is being revealed to us. And we have to be open to God and saying, okay, God, maybe I don't understand it. Not maybe, I don't understand it right now. But I will stay true to you and listen to you. Now I'd like to have Brother Gregory come up. On Rosary Sunday, we invite one of our student brothers to come out and preach, and we have one built in right here. So Brother Gregory, it's a fascinating story, and we're going to see how Brother Gregory, as all of us should think about our own vocation story, said yes to God, and God twists and turns and eventually gets us where he wants us. So after all, I'd like to ask Brother Gregory to come forward and give us his vocation story.
First of all, I want to thank you, dear brothers and sisters, for having so warmly received me into St. Dominic's with an open arm in the last few weeks or so. I am very deeply touched by your love and kindness, and I'm looking forward to serving you to the best of my ability in the coming year. I am humbled to have the privilege to stand here before you to tell you how your support has made it possible for me to be here, to stand here to speak to you, and be here to serve you. So, what does a scientist and a Dominican have in common? At a first glance, probably not much. But in a deeper level, I think they both seek the same thing, which is truth, or as we Dominicans like to put it in Latin, veritas. So born in a Catholic family in Taiwan, and being a religious minority over there has made me keenly aware of my Catholic identity since I was very, very young. I was captivated by the beauty of my Catholic faith that my parents handed down to me. Since fourth grade, being an altar server like these two wonderful young people right here, Sunday after Sunday really brought me a profound joy, and this really instilled in me a love of the liturgy of the church, and especially during the Holy Week. And little did I know, I think God might have planted a seed of religious vocation at that time. As early as middle school, I was asked by the priest in the parish or the religious sisters or parishioners if I ever wanted to become a priest. But ever since the time I was very, very young, all I wanted to be was a great scientist. I never gave priesthood a serious thought. And in my high school, I fell in love with chemistry. The gracious Lord gave me the wonderful opportunity to study chemistry at University of Toronto in Canada. And I studied assiduously so that one day I might go to a good graduate school to study more chemistry. But God didn't stop nagging. During my college years, I was approached by the vocations directors of two different religious orders and also my pastor to see if there is a possibility of God calling me to become a priest or religious. But I was quite dismissive about this possibility of God's call. The reason being, I just wanted to study more chemistry, and plus, dating a beautiful girl at that time didn't really help. But God was very patient with me. He allowed me to study a lot more chemistry, more than I ever wanted to. So I went on to graduate school at University of Illinois, and I entered the field of synthetic organic chemistry. And I really enjoyed making all sorts of different molecules. To me, it was a lot like cooking. So you put things together, you stir them up, you heat them up, and out comes your product. And to the chemists and chemical engineers here, I know we have a lot of you guys in the parish, I really loved transition metals. I think they do very interesting things. It's fascinating. And I realized that I was participating in God's creation through my hands, and that was why I enjoyed it so much. In my prayer, I offered the fruits of my toil and labor to God, And thus, my lap became my sanctuary. My lap bench became my altar. And my white lab coat became my vestment. But as much as I enjoyed organic chemistry, I was also under a tremendous stress in the meantime. Working long hours in the lab, day in and day out, I felt very much isolated if I was in a desert. I was just cut off to the outside world and was chained down over there. And so at that point, I realized I could not do it alone. I needed God at my side. So in my desperation, I reached out for God, for solace, and I would sneak out to the mass on campus at the Newman Center around lunchtime. And God, in his mercy, also reached out to me through my spiritual director. And through this trial, I grew closer to Christ, and I was more educated about the faith. And by God's mercy, after 7 long years, I finally got my PhD in organic chemistry in 2009. And when I moved to UC Berkeley for a postdoctoral research position, this nagging voice came back. I was again asked by the parishioners if I ever considered being a priest. And my time in Berkeley was a very important point in my life. I was in a transition point. At that juncture, I had to make a decision. I had to decide if I wanted to go into the chemical industry, or should I become a chemistry professor, or should I even consider religious life. So at that time, I was at St. Mary Magdalene Parish in Berkeley, and I got to know our wonderful Father David. Father David was my pastor over there. And from the parish bulletin, I saw the Come and See Weekend of the Student Brothers' community in Oakland at St. Albert's Priory. And so I signed up so that I can have a taste of their life. And that was also the time when I met Father Corwin at St. Albert's Priory in Oakland. And during that visit, something marvelous happened. Something just clicked. And I found that I was able to relate to a lot of the brothers in the community because they have a very similar background. And there was this indescribable joy permeating in this community, this priory, especially around the dinner table. And also the emphasis of study and this harmony between faith and reason, this analytical approach to the faith, really appealed to me as a scientist. And finally, I fully identify with the Dominican mission of preaching, which is, in my mind, in my opinion, so much needed in this world that's filled with confusion. So as I said, this experience left a deep impression in me and kindled my aspiration to become a Dominican myself. And therefore, I kept up meeting with my spiritual director and the vocations director periodically to make sure that my discernment was on the right track. I also made a point of keeping a consistent prayer life and going to confession regularly. And in a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, I was especially inspired, as Father Jerome just said, Mary's, yes, her fiat to God, when I visited the Basilica of Annunciation in Nazareth. I also went on a few retreats to have quiet time with God. And during those retreats, I was able to have an honest self-reflection. I realized that in my past, I was always seeking my own glory and my prestige, and never really asked what God wanted me to do, what I should do for God. And so God, in his kindness, at that time opened the door for me to serve the church in various ministries of the church. And through this, I found a great sense of joy and affirmation. I knew at that time that this was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So by God's grace, I was admitted to the Dominican Order in June of 2012. And thank you for your support. In the order, I was able to receive an excellent education at Dominican School of Philosophy and Theology in Berkeley. And since I didn't have any prior background in philosophy, I had to start everything from scratch. It was an arduous journey for sure, but in 2 short years, I was able to finish the courses required for a philosophy MA degree. And now I'm working on an exciting thesis project, trying to engage the thoughts of St. Thomas Aquinas and Chinese philosophy. So looking back, I think my story can be summarized as first being called by God and trying to run away and be in denial, and then eventually surrendering to God. And God, in his kindness, took me on this wonderful journey from pursuing good to the greatest good, from pursuing truth to the ultimate truth. So the story that I just shared with you is only one of 27 that bear witness to your generosity. Your gift helps the Dominican order to form the next generation of faithful Dominican priests. When St. Dominic founded the order, he envisioned that he would establish a band of preaching friars to go to the ends of the world to spread the gospel and to defend the truth of the Christian faith. In the meantime, St. Dominic, in his genius, left us a legacy of voluntary poverty, which is to say, he made his spiritual sons mendicants, or beggars, basically. That is to say, they would not be tied down by worldly wealth, but instead, the friars would have the freedom to preach wherever they are most needed. But none of that would be possible without your support, and none of that will be possible without our benefactors, which is basically every one of you. So begging is exactly what I'm trying to do right now. And so I would like to invite you to prayerfully consider during the Mass how much you would be able to contribute to this great cause, this Rosary Sunday appeal, how much you would like to make a gift to this appeal to help the Dominican brothers to receive the best education possible. And if you're unable to make a donation right now, I will also invite you to take an envelope and pray about it at home and to see how much you would like to contribute to this great cause. Finally, may the Lord reward you abundantly for your generosity. And may Our Lady of the Most Holy Rosary intercede fervently for each one of you. Amen.